Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I am married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online and I'm in the...
And I just decided Russell needed to go. The reason being is that we had a technical difficulty, a glitch. Hi, I'm Carol Jurgensen-Sheets, a.k.a. Carol the Coach, and I am so happy to be here with you. You know, one of the things that I really believe is that this show can be so informative and motivational in terms of inspiring you to meet your needs and to regain the life that you once wanted. Now, if you're a single addict, you might be interested in today's show, but this is really about redemption. It's really about how do people begin to trust again when sexual addiction has occurred. And so if you're a married person, you're a married or you're a married partner, and you want to know how you can rebuild your relationship, well, the key to that, no doubt, is being able to, if you will, not just repair a relationship, but create a whole new one. And today, I've got Kristen on, and she's going to talk about how did she do that? How was she able to find it in her heart and her soul to rebuild that relationship, right? And that is no easy task. I know it isn't. And yet in ERCOM, the Early Recovery Couples Empathy Model, I do my absolute best to really help couples to know that they can rebuild a relationship. And so we're so lucky to have her on because she's going to be sharing her own personal story. And, you know, it's not often that we talk to partners who have been able to not only recover and become a survivor, but they become a thriver. And that's what I feel like Kristen has done within her relationship and within herself. So with no further ado, I do want to introduce you to somebody who's just really inspired a lot of women. Kristen D. Samuel, welcome to Sex Health with Carol the Coach.
Thank you, Carol. It's wonderful to be here.
Yes, and you know, I've heard your story, and I felt like I wanted to know what it was that you were doing to not only repair, but create a whole new marriage. So do you mind sharing a little bit about the impact of pornography addiction and how you found out and what you did about it? And just give us the whole lowdown on this.
Sure. Well, I found out when my husband came home from work one day, and he just, he was pale. He wasn't talking very much. He didn't eat dinner. We both had a very busy day at work and came home, and I went in later, and and found him laying on the bed, and I thought, what's wrong? So I just asked him, I said, what's going on? And he told me it's very likely I'll lose my job tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And I thought, what? And I said, well, what's, you know, why? And he told me because of a moral failure. I did not expect that. Mm-hmm. And he had been looking at some things that were inappropriate at his workplace, and they had been tracking it. Mm-hmm. He'd been confronted that afternoon and told that he, they confronted him with the information they had, and he admitted it. He said, I've been struggling with pornography for all my life. He'd been exposed around the age of 5 or 6, and it got a hold of him.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had struggled with it. And when the internet became readily available to all of us, it fed his struggle. And
so you're saying that his brain got hijacked. It got a hold of him, as you said, early on in his development, way before he met you. And this mm-hmm. was a secret throughout your entire dating and your early marriage.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, he reminds me, he said that he did say something to me while we were dating. I never heard it.
Okay.
I don't know how to tell you that. I just never heard it. So anyway, he said, I have to come in with a plan in the morning about how I'm going to overcome this. Otherwise, I'm going to lose my job. And he said, I don't know what to do. And by this point, Carol, you deal with women in my situation all the time. I can't breathe. I can't think. I'm a mess. Mm-hmm. I'm angry. I'm hurt. I'm in shock. And in the middle of that, because I'm a person of faith, I believe that God planted a name in my mind. And I said, I think I need to call Kathy. Kathy was a coworker of mine who's also a counselor. And I said, I think we need to call Kathy because we need help. I have no idea. And at this point, I'm really angry with him, like the most angry I've ever been with anyone in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even want to look at him. I didn't want to touch him. I didn't want to be around him. I just knew that we needed help.
Mm-hmm.
So he agreed to that. We made the call. And within about an hour of time, we were sitting down with Kathy and her husband, who are both counselors. And that's when I got my first ray of hope, and that was, this does not have to be fatal. They heard him pour out what had happened. I'm sitting there not even hardly able to articulate anything because the tears are coming so hard and so fast that I'm angry and I'm hurt. But they said, this doesn't have to be fatal, but there's a lot of work ahead of you. And boy, they weren't kidding, Carol. You know, that process. I will be on.
So can I ask you, it got discovered at work, and
yeah.
Was he in, I mean, did they have contracts where you could not look at pornography? Was there a policy? Was he involved with the church? Was he at a school?
Sure. He was working for, at the time, an international Christian organization, and it was very clear in their policy pornography would not be tolerated. It was grounds for immediate dismissal. So the fact that they were giving him time
mm-hmm.
was grace to him and to us.
Mm-hmm.
So long story short, the next morning, my husband also met with a friend of ours that we had known for many, many years, who also worked for another different Christian organization.
Mm-hmm.
And he just said, I need to tell somebody what I've done. And he did. And Peter said, you know, I'm familiar with the process, and it comes from the book Restoring the Fallen by Ed and Sandy Wilson and some other authors. And he said, I've seen this happen, and we've used it. I think this might be something you could present to your employer as an option. So when my husband went into that meeting, he presented it, and they said, yes, we agree to that. The Kathy and her husband the night before had told us that we needed to get intensive marriage counseling. We needed counseling. We needed help. And they said, you have to get counseling, marriage counseling. You know, my husband needed a counseling, marriage counseling. And if you'll take all of these steps, you have 1 week to get everything put into place. And so they let him keep his job. He was on a probationary period.
Mm-hmm.
But we had to start proving that we were doing that stuff. So that's what we did.
So you're the innocent bystander in a way. I mean, mm-hmm. you didn't have any knowledge of this that you can recall. Now, all of a sudden, you're doing what so many partners kind of reel from. They have to start doing all this work, and this happened to them, and why should they have to work? But that's part of the process. And certainly God promises, as well as I really believe, that the kind of work you put into yourself as a couple, individually, you're going to get a lot back, and your life can be better than ever. But you didn't know that then, did you?
No, and you voiced it beautifully, because I was like, why do I have to do all this work? I didn't do this. He did it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that was part of my anger, was I didn't do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he did this. And I was in the poor me, very much in a victim mindset of it was all done to me. And it was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I didn't force him to do any of this.
So what gave you the courage to fight for the marriage?
Great question. I get that asked that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly didn't want a divorce. I didn't believe in divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so afraid of being a statistic that I was willing to do what I had to do.
Mm-hmm.
But the other part of it was, we'd been married 25 years when all of this came out.
Okay.
And my husband had been, throughout our entire marriage, had been a very kind, very in tune to me, almost a little bit like, really? You already knew that about me? You know,
mm-hmm.
type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it just didn't, I was having trouble reconciling him, looking at porn with the man that I had been married to for 25 years. And I kept thinking, surely this isn't true. There's got to be something going on that caused him to do it. And the other part of it was, I thought, from the moment he told me throughout this entire process in the last 17 years, he had done everything he said he would do. He proved it time and time again. And like I said, we immediately got help. He, within the next week, was in seeing a counselor who recommended him to another counselor who specialized in sexual addiction recovery and specifically pornography. And then when he met with that counselor, he came home, and that counselor said he wanted to meet with me,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, again, I was like, okay, fine, whatever. I'll do whatever I have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And although I wasn't willing,
mm-hmm.
I was pretty about it. But that counselor then ended up doing our intensive marriage counseling 4 months later. And part of what we also went through was establishing, through this book, Restoring the Fallen, establishing what was called a restoration team. And it was basically a group of coaches who walked alongside us. And because it had a spiritual formation, they also prayed for us. But what we did, Carol, which was so frightening, so over the top for me specifically, was we gave them the right to take over our lives, which basically meant we didn't make any decisions without them. We removed everything, every activity from our life other than going to work, going to church, going to counseling, and meeting with this restoration team.
Wow.
At the end, 18 months later, when we stopped that process with them, we met with them weekly. They literally became our lifeline because they created a cocoon for us to process all of this. They asked the hard questions, and we were able to process. We were able to get the story out. You know, Dave could get it out in a way that there were people there to help me process, help him process. They asked great questions. It was hard. It was painful, but it gave me hope, and it gave my husband hope, and it gave us our life back.
Well, and I'm sitting here thinking, I was just speaking with a woman a couple days ago, and their church had something similar, but it went horribly awry. They took over. They had control. They wouldn't let her go back to her family. They said, we are your new family. You're going to go stay with us. And then they started saying, what did you do to contribute to this man's dissatisfaction? And we know that that's spiritual abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And I do believe they meant they meant to be good and kind and supportive, but they didn't know what they didn't know. I'm not villainizing or demonizing them, but they did a lot of damage. But mm-hmm. you're saying that everything that this team did that was spiritually based, the book spiritually based, kept you protected from all the different stimuli out there that could have just torn you apart, or individually or as a couple.
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Yes. And they also mandated things like we put covenant eyes on all of our internet-based devices, including mine.
Mm-hmm.
We did it for the family. So we did everything. There were certain conferences that they heard about which dealt with healing, emotional, relational, spiritual, all this stuff. And they said, you're going to go to it. It's a one day workshop. We want you to go. We want you to report back what you learned. We also gave them access to our counselor. So they could talk with our counselor. We actually met with this whole team and our counselor after our intensive marriage counseling. So he could give insights after doing a whole battery of personality tests on us. He could tell them his observations,
mm-hmm.
his concerns. And then we gave them the right to communicate with my husband's employer. So they gave weekly reports to the employer about how we were doing. Were we complying with what we said we would do?
Mm-hmm.
Was my husband doing everything that he said he would do? All of those things, Carol, gave me confidence that we could recover.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I get that. And certainly you needed somebody to, as a small child would need, just be held, be guided and directed, be prayed for, and just really take away any temptation, take away any confusion. I mean, this whole process for partners and addicts alike, it's just horrible. And so you found a group of people that could almost become your family of choice and help mm-hmm. guide you. Now, I do have a couple questions. First of all, so oftentimes I talk to partners who feel that there's something wrong with them that drove the addict to that, whether it's pornography, affair partners, prostitutes, you name it. And what did you know about addiction ahead of time, and what did you learn about addiction throughout this whole process?
I knew nothing okay. about addiction ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
Everything you just said, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
I believed I had done something wrong immediately. That was what hit me, was I had done something wrong. And so in the process of going through this, I learned, like, my first thing that I said to my husband was, well, you just need to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I didn't know anything about an addiction. I didn't know that you can't just stop it.
Right.
And if you want to, and he had tried.
Mm-hmm.
He told me about the number of times he had tried. He described his, what he calls the shame cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about a 4-month cycle,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then he would trigger and he'd start all over again.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to learn by listening to him and letting him tell me these things that were like daggers to my heart.
Uh-huh.
But letting him tell me what it was like to struggle with this addiction. And then the more that I started to learn, because I love to research. And so I started jumping in and reading different things. I was recommended reading, books to read. I read Intimate Betrayal. I read The Wounded Heart by Dan Allender. I've read you know, so many other books, you know, Out of the Fog, you know, The Brain, you know, all of these that I'm still reading those today. I was given some sexual recovery, you know, partner books to read about how do you recover as the partner who's someone who's struggling with a sexual addiction. And I actually went through that with my counselor. I ended up going into counseling because in the process of this whole thing, we found out that I had suicidal depression.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been hiding my own story of sexual assault mm-hmm. as a child. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how to tell that story, so I've been hiding that.
So
that had developed in me suicidal depression. So in the process of coming through all of this started coming out. So not only was I walking as the partner, the betrayed partner, but now my husband was also walking as the partner of someone who was suicidally depressed. So we needed a lot of help.
Well, it's so eye-opening to realize that in needing the help, you can learn so much about yourself. And most definitely, Kristen has gotten to post-traumatic growth, that's what I call it, in my couples work with couples. And, you know, you had taken a situation, surrendered to it, opened your heart to whatever God had for you, as well as your husband, as well as this team, as well as yourself. And you listened and you followed it almost to a T. And, you know, I really believe that addicts, if they follow the 10 recovery tools that I talk about, they can get clean, but their wife is still in the fetal position on the floor, right? And that's why we've got to incorporate wives with husbands as soon as discovery occurs so that they're not left out, so that they're educated, so that they're embraced. And that requires looking at partners through a partner-sensitive lens, does it not?
Yeah, and that's what this team did. And I love, you know, I've been listening to a lot of your videos, and I love how you're approaching it because it's so true. Other than this team, I did not know at that time of any other resources for me
mm-hmm.
as the spouse. I heard things like, well, you're just going to have to forgive and forget. Just move on. He's a good man. What are you, you know, don't throw this away. All of these things were, you know, and I did hear, well, you must have, you know, what did you do?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And those things that just further wound the betrayed partner. And go ahead.
So how long ago was discovery?
It was in 2007, so 17 years this summer.
Wow, I got cold chills. That's when I got my CSAT, which is my Certified Sex Addictions Therapy certification. Okay, so I get that in 17 years, a lot can happen. And I also know that this podcast was the only podcast on sex addiction in the world in 2007. And now we have bajillion podcasts, mm-hmm. and there's so many good ones out there. But you both were really so fortunate to have a team way back then when mm-hmm. there were not resources available and certainly not for partners.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's what was so unique for us was, and that's the thing that really has driven my passion for other women who find themselves in this situation. Is I know there's a better way. I know there's help available for you. I want to be the one that floods the resources out to them. Not that I have all the answers, mm-hmm. but that I can flood the resources. I can direct them to people like you, to, you know, counselors that I know that will work with partners as well as the betrayer,
mm-hmm.
as you know, and do that. So I believe it was God ordained. That he had put these people into our lives. We didn't have them connected,
mm-hmm.
but he put those people in our lives so that when we asked, the only question we have asked is, well, what do we do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I was like, I have no idea. And when I asked that, the person that I asked it to had an answer.
Mm-hmm.
The person my husband asked had an answer.
Mm-hmm.
And as everything came together, this is the process that we were able to go through.
Well, you know, with AFSAT, they believe in that three-phase model. The first phase is safety and stabilization. That can take a woman 9 months to 3 years to really, again, begin to feel safe. And then mm-hmm. that second phase is grieving and mourning the loss of what you had, the loss of who you were, the loss of who he was, and the loss of what's yet to come. I mean, there's a real fear to trust the future.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that last phase, according to AFSAT, is restoration. Restoration of the self, restoration of the coupleship, maybe, for some couples, not so much. And then restoration of a relationship with God. And you said I was very spiritual. You know, mm-hmm. I was very faith-based. And obviously he was doing faith-based work too. So my question is, how long do you think it took you to really feel stable in your relationship with your husband? It's a threefold question. So this is the first question. How long did it take you?
3 years.
Okay. So despite all of this incredible support, it did take you 3 years, about the end of the general average amount of time mm-hmm. it takes a partner. We know some partners can get through that sooner, and some partners it can take 10 times as long. Mm-hmm. And then did you do grief and mourning work?
I did with my counselor, and I was so surprised by that. I did it individually.
Mm-hmm.
When she brought that out, she said, "You're grieving." And I said, "What?" And I just didn't believe it. And she pointed it out to me. And as that flood opened,
mm-hmm.
when I realized there's a lot of things in my life I have never grieved.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and she took me back through all of that. And this, of course, was one of the hardest things I'd ever had to go through.
Mm-hmm.
And I was grieving the loss of the relationship I thought I had. I was grieving the loss of the man I thought I had married. I was grieving the loss of my expectations for my life. My life wasn't going anyway
mm-hmm.
the way I had planned it to go
mm-hmm.
at all. And I had to give that all up. I also went into a huge faith crisis. I was like, then you're not God. Because you could have protected me and you didn't.
Mm-hmm.
This has happened and you knew about this. You could have protected my husband. You could have protected me. You didn't. So I went into a huge faith crisis
mm-hmm.
where I just really went into a deep, dark pit that was very, very frightening.
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, I say to partners when they're ready to hear it, God can provide miracles, but the truth is that there are lots of people out there that have been through way worse, that he did not remove that pain. He did not remove that struggle. I believe God wants you to lean into him mm-hmm. and strengthen that connection. Once you, you know, get out of the water and stop drowning or get out of the fog and start seeing. And I always say, you know, for young children that have been molested,
mm-hmm.
If God could do all those things, and again, he could, but if that was God's destiny, those children would be protected. And you referenced some almost complex post-traumatic stress in your own history mm-hmm. with assault,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah,
And so in that second phase, did you work through the grief and mourning of what happened to you as a child or as a younger person?
I actually, when my counselor took me through that, I had actually questioned whether it had actually happened to me or not.
Mm.
Because I had so suppressed it, and I had never talked about it until I met my husband. He was the first person I told, and I brushed it off like, I'm just fine. When she took me back to that day, when she had me start telling her what I remembered, my bodily reaction to it was very surprising to me. I mean, I started sobbing. I was shaking. I was hyperventilating.
Mm-hmm.
I had all the smells. I had everything. And she said, this is very real. And then she took me through the process of reliving it. And then one of the things she did was tell me where God is, which I was very surprised. She said, I want you to close your eyes and I want you to tell me where do you see God? Do you see him? Where is he? And what I realized in that moment, Carol, was he was standing right there and he was weeping. He was weeping for me and he was weeping for the person assaulting me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because this wasn't what he wanted for either one of us.
Mm-hmm.
The person assaulted me had made a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And in that moment, I was able to say, okay, I was not alone, even though I thought I was alone. And he helped me get away. I mean, there's no reason that a 9-year-old little girl should be able to run away from a grown man.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to run away. So I was able to start putting a different lens. And I was able to grieve that because something was taken from me
mm-hmm.
at that point that I didn't deserve. And again, the other lie that I had that fed into what my husband and I were going through was I did something wrong.
Mm-hmm. And certainly that's what kids think whenever something bad happens to them. Their parents divorced. What did I do? What could I have done differently? You get molested. How did I contribute to that? And that plays itself out time and time again, even into adulthood. I mean, that's mm-hmm. what the suicidal depression was all about. You're mm-hmm. sensing you were responsible for something that you weren't.
Right.
So you did go into that second phase, and you did that anger, sadness, grief, mourning work. And I said anger because Erkin believes in anger. They mm-hmm. believe that it can be a positive, powerful thing if you're with the right people to guide you through it.
Mm-hmm.
When do you think you began to probably do the split from your grief work over there to post-traumatic growth? How many years into your recovery were you?
I was well beyond 3 years.
Okay.
I would say I was closer to 5 years.
Okay.
Because in that first 5 years, my husband had a relapse that he, you know, thankfully came clean on immediately. We still had the connection with our support team. He got the help that he needed. I got the help I needed. But probably at about 5 years was when I was able to start really dealing with a lot of what I call the lies I believed.
Mm-hmm.
I was journaling at this time. My counselor really got me into journaling, into mm-hmm. a journaling process of asking questions. And I was journaling then, and I remember just starting to really pour out. And then about 12 years after this all happened, in 2015, 2015, I was challenged to tell the story.
Mm.
And the process of writing out the story of what had happened took me 18 months to write it.
Mm-hmm.
And I cried through every word.
And what's the name of the story? Because you've actually written a book.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Called Choosing a Way Out When the Bottom Isn't the Bottom.
Mm. Okay. And that would be...
It's right behind me.
Yeah, our listening audience can't see her, so I don't know why I'm doing this, but she has a stack of these books. And say it one more time, Choosing a Way Out
When the Bottom Isn't the Bottom.
Oh, I like that. I like that a lot. So you wrote the story. It took you about 18 months. And when you were writing it, were you already aware that you were going to have it published, or did that come later too?
When I first started thinking about writing it, I was writing it just for me, mm-hmm. and I was writing it for our kids so that our kids would know what had happened. And it was really cathartic for me. But very quickly into that process, I sensed that it was time to tell the story,
mm-hmm.
that other people needed to hear it. And so I got connected with a hybrid publisher. He heard about the story and said, I want to publish this. Let's do this. And so he coached me through the process of writing it. And I remember one day sending him a text message saying, I cannot tell the story. I was sobbing so deeply. I couldn't see my computer. I mean, I just, you know, the ugly cry.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you're only writing it for an audience of one. And whether you publish it or not is not the issue. You need to write the story. And through that, Carol, I went into another level of recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband and I went into another level of recovery because there were things we had to talk about
mm-hmm.
and say, I don't understand this. Can you help me understand it? Because I can't write about it. I don't understand it. We had hours-long discussions that brought a deeper level of intimacy between us because it was the next layer that needed to come out.
Well, and how vulnerable for both of you. I mean, you're telling your story, and yet you're telling of the atrocity that happened to you via your husband and all the other events. Mm-hmm. And you didn't use a pen name? You used your own name?
No, that was a hard decision for both of us. We talked about it, and I said, I really am feeling compelled to use my own name.
Mm-hmm.
And I used his name.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I got permission from our kids. Our kids' names are in there. I got permission from our restoration team to use their names. Our counselor's name is in there. In fact, our counselor endorsed the book.
Mm-hmm.
And interesting, because of the depression, interesting that happened when I was going to publish the book, my husband reminded me that at the end of our intensive marriage counseling, the counselor said, I hope you're taking notes and writing this down, because what you're going through and the process that you have been able to go through is so unique, other people need to hear about it. I had no memory of that conversation.
Mm-hmm. Here we go again, no memory of the conversation, but he did. And, you know, that's the beauty of marriage, is having a second set of eyes on things. And recall and all sorts of things. Now, Kristen, how can they get your book? Where can they go?
My website, kirstendsamuel.com, is KIRSTEND, as in Diane, Samuel, FAMUEL.com. And under resources, it says books. And there's a link there. It'll ship directly to you from Amazon. If you want an autographed copy, I have a few copies. Just let me know, and I'm happy to send it to you, to anyone. But it's right there. So it's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's available internationally. So it's easy to get to.
Well, and, you know, I really appreciate that a hybrid publisher. I use a hybrid as well, because it gives you the best of guidance, and yet mm-hmm. really allows you to do your own thing.
Yeah.
And so you got over there to post-traumatic growth, and then you wrote the book?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you got the approval from everybody. And how old are your kids today?
They are 40, 38, and 35.
She doesn't look that old at all. So, and I'm looking at your composure. I mean, I believe all the time that when you make the choice to do hard things that are going to be positive, whether that's exercise, whether that's mindfulness, whether that's a memoir, whether that's journaling, that catapults you into post-traumatic growth,
mm-hmm.
even when you don't feel like you're there. And that is a choice, and you have to reenact what you know to be true, but you haven't had the energy, or you thought it'd be too complicated, and do it anyway.
Yeah, it is a choice, which is why I named my book the way I did,
mm-hmm.
Choices.
Yes, so one more time, tell them the name of the book.
It's Choosing a Way Out When the Bottom Isn't the Bottom.
And she also has on her website a free resource, 11 Shame-Provoking Lies People Tell About Porn Addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are so many lies, and there are so many justifications and rationalizations and minimizations about porn. And I remember that I became a CSAT, and we were supposed to be porn neutral. And I lived with that. I lived with that for maybe a couple years. I didn't really have to deal much with it, because I was helping men get better, and I didn't share my porn neutrality.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started working with partners. And it was like I got hit over the head with a baseball bat. You know, first of all, they're totally traumatized by their husband's porn use. Sometimes it stopped at porn. Most of the time it got worse and worse and worse, so that it ended up being interactive sex of some sort. And then I thought to myself, how could anybody be a proponent of this when there's so much sex trafficking and people who are being exploited? And I went, I am not being porn neutral. I'm creating a stand about this. And, you know, I've worked with many professionals, and when they say, well, I'm porn neutral, I say, well, I am not, and here's why, and I'd like for you to reconsider. You can do what you want, but I think you're making a bad choice.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I believe, and I'm sure you do too, when you know better, you do better. And I think I learned better.
Well, and I mean, I never thought about porn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I just never thought about it. But boy, I am not porn neutral, not any way, shape, or form. And I have seen what it can do. I have friends that it has literally destroyed their marriage. I talk with women a lot, and I've seen it all. I literally ended up in court just as a support for a client of mine, and her marriage, which was fueled, the problems were fueled by porn, dissolved, and her husband was actually convicted of a crime.
Wow.
So I've seen this devastation,
mm-hmm.
and I've looked at some of the devastation.
Well, I want to remind our listening audience, because we have to end, that if you would like to speak with Kristen, if you'd like to work with Kristen, if you'd like to get her book, you can always go to her website. And that is, what is your website?
It's KristenDSamuel.com. It's my name, Kristen, it's KristenB Samuel, like the first name Samuel.com.
That's right. And you can email her at support@KristenGSamuel.com, and that D does not have a period after it, so it just all blends together. And Kristen, thank you for sharing your inspiring story and your wisdom and showing men and women, because I believe men want to know that their wives can get better. So thank you for sharing that story, because we don't have the belief that all couples need to stay together. But if they want to be together, there is a way out, and there's a way to get healthy, and there's a way to be stronger than they've ever been before and healthier than they've ever been before.
Yeah, that's the part of my story I love the most, is that I'm still married to the same guy, but he's different, I'm different, and the last 17 years have been so much more enjoyable, honest, authentic, intimate, and a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I hope to interview you again, and thanks so much. And thank your husband for us, too.
I will. Thank you so much for the work that you continue to do. I so appreciate it.
Thank you, Kristen. Talk to you soon.
All right. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, I would definitely get this book. You know, she gave me a flyer and did not put the name of the book. So I missed that. But I know that it's going to be very riveting. I love memoirs, and I love when somebody has taken their life to the next level, as Kristen has done. Okay. Thank you for listening to today's show, and we will talk soon. As I say at the end of every show, there'll only be one of you at all times. Fearlessly have the courage to be yourself. And go to KristenDSamuel.com. That's KristenSTENV and then Samuel.com. We'll catch you next week for more sex help with Carol the Coach. Make it a great week.